All right. Dr. Shane Robbins, ATC, was named superintendent for Kershaw County School District in May of 2018. Prior to coming to Kershaw County, Dr. Robbins served as a teacher and administrator in Indiana for over 20 years, with the last 10 years serving as the role of superintendent. Dr. Robbins brings a sense of desire and passion to work collaboratively with staff, students, and the community to ensure schools are providing students with a 21st century learning environment. During his tenure as superintendent, Dr. Robbins has overseen technology integration initiatives that allow schools to move away from traditional classroom instruction and textbooks. The vision embraces a blended project-based learning approach and a one-to-one technology where students leverage technology to increase engagement for improved outcomes. Under his leadership, Kershaw County School District was selected as one of the first e-learning districts in South Carolina. In addition, the school district has been named a National Exemplar District by the National Council on Digital Convergence. This recognition is awarded to school districts that achieve stage 3 or above in the Digital Convergence Framework, a research-based methodology to personalize learning at scale. In addition, Dr. Robbins served on the National Council on Digital Convergence as well as Thought Exchange Superintendent's Leadership Council. This past school year, Dr. Robbins was one of 5 educators featured on a U.S. Department of Education roundtable about the best practices for reopening schools during the pandemic. Dr. Robbins has served in the United States Army since 1987, elevated to the rank of colonel. He served as the education officer and chief of operations on a deployment to Afghanistan in support of Operation Enduring Freedom, where his team was charged with training both secondary and post-secondary agriculture teachers and professors. During his military career, he has been recognized with multiple major awards, including the Bronze Star, Humanitarian Service Medal, NATO Service Medal, and the Operation Enduring Freedom Service Award. Dr. Robbins graduated from Franklin College with a BA in Allied Health and Athletic Training. His graduate degrees include a master's degree in secondary education and K-12 administration. He also earned an education specialist degree as a superintendent and a doctorate in leadership from Ball State University. Dr. Robbins and his wife Heather have 2 sons, Bryce and Brandon. And it is my privilege to introduce Dr. Robbins, another combat veteran.
You know, in my role, I represent almost 11,000 students in Kershaw County and 1,600 employees. We're the largest employer in the county. And so it's not a thing that I take lightly. I never really chose to, aspire to be a superintendent. It just kind of happened, but my passion is for kids. My passion is for making a difference. And my passion is to make sure that they have every opportunity that they can to be successful in the future. Not looking at the past, but always looking forward. So again, thank you for allowing me to be here.
The first function of schooling is adjustive. Schools are to establish fixed habits of reaction to authority. That's fixed habits of reaction. Notice that this precludes critical judgment completely. Notice too that requiring obedience to stupid orders is a much better test of function one than following sensible orders ever could be. You don't know whether people are reflexively obedient unless they'll march right off the cliff.
My question is, if things are mandated from the federal government and funds are passed down, from the federal government on to the state, to the school districts, are we going to have any problems having to adjust to the mandates that they may give us?
I think you know the answer to that question if you're on the school board for 10 years, but I'll answer it for you. There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms. There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms. There are certain things that we have to comply with,
There are certain things that we have to comply with. There are certain things that we have to comply with. There are certain things that we have to comply with. There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms.
Second is the diagnostic function. School is to determine each student's proper social role, logging the evidence mathematically and anecdotally on cumulative records. You probably thought that the kid or parents or neighbors or the region circumstances. No, the school is to determine your proper social role and they're to fix you in that role mathematically on their cumulative records.
You know, we deal with it as it comes, but do remember in the federal constitution that education is handed down to the states and then delegated to the communities. And so we'll deal with it just like the LGBTQ stuff and critical race theory as our board sees fit, who are elected by you all. But before I even get into my slides, just let me say thank you. I say thank you because we just endured probably one of the most torturous school years that anybody can imagine in the last 50 years. And I think that the Kershaw County School District did it well. There are certain things that we have to comply with. There are certain things that we have to comply with. There are certain things that we have to comply with. Did we do it perfect? Absolutely not. But here's what we promised to do for our community, and I think we were successful in doing. We gave our community a choice. There were families that absolutely did not feel comfortable in sending their kids back to school, and they kept them home in a virtual environment. We supported that. There were families that said, we want our kids to go back to school in a face-to-face environment, and we supported that. And if it wasn't for the foundations that we had put into place with our 21st century learning model, the virtual environment would have been torturous. And I think for some of you who have some connections to some of these families, the virtual environment wasn't a good thing for a lot of kids, but it was still a family's choice. And as a school district, we pride ourselves in trying to provide our community with choices. And there are certain things that we have to comply with. There are certain things that we have to comply with. There are certain things that we have to comply with.
Opportunities. And so, again, I say thank you because we received a lot of recognition for the things that we're doing, and it was really because the community supported our efforts, and what we were trying to do is support our community at the same time, and I think it turned out about as well as what people could expect. We were the first district in the Midlands to go back to school face-to-face 5 days a week. We did that in September. Most school districts in the Midlands didn't ever achieve that by the end of the school year. We ended up getting almost 80% of our kids back in a face-to-face environment. We had real-time tracking of the COVID cases in our schools, and what we found was our schools were safer and cleaner environments for our kids and our staff to be in. Did we have transmission of COVID into schools? Absolutely, we did. But most of that happened or occurred through contact tracing outside of the schools and not within the schools. The school district invested a lot of money to sanitize our facilities, our school buses, and our classrooms to try to mitigate that as much as possible. So again, I think it was as successful as what we could have hoped for in such a difficult year.
Next comes the sorting function. School sorts children by training individuals only so far as their likely destination in the social machine, not one step beyond. Keep in mind, you're not listening to John Gatto. You're listening to the man for whom the honor lecture in education at Harvard is named.
So the first thing I do want to talk about is, okay, we modified our protocols. We had reopening response protocols so that we could open our doors last year. What I would encourage you to do is go to the link that's in this slide deck, and Katie, if you could send this to the folks, that'd be great. And it has a comprehensive look of what the protocols look like coming up in the current school year we're getting ready to go into. But I wanted to hit some key points that I thought may be interesting for folks. First of all, at the end of the school year, and I really tried to balance between what the community wanted and what CDC and DHEC were stating to provide those protocols that would allow us to not make the district liable. There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms. So in the upcoming school year, face masks will be completely optional, 100%. There will be no waiver or opt-out form. It's just an optional thing for students. Just last week, the State Department released a memo that is making face masks on school buses optional. They had not eliminated that provision going into the next school year, and that's something that we can't control, because that comes from the Department of Transportation down to our local State Department and then to the school districts. So if they wouldn't have lifted that, we would have still had to require face masks on our school buses. There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms. However, because of that memo that came out last week, face masks on school buses will also be optional. We are now able to maximum occupy our stadiums and our arenas. There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms.
The fourth function is conformity. As much as possible, kids are to be made alike. Whatever the background they come from, they're to be made alike. This is not done from any passion for egalitarian ideals, but so that their future behavior will be mathematically predictable in service to market research and government research.
Yes. Again, there will be no limitation. The limitations will be fire code capacities, which we've always had in place. And so maximum attendance will be allowed at those facilities. School bus capacity was limited to 66.67%. There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms. Educators talk consistently about academics and achievement, But when kids come in our building, it's more than just teaching a child. There is the social and emotional health of a child that we have to deal with, and they come from all walks of life. You know, it's not just based on race and gender, it's socioeconomics and all these different things piled together. So when you look at a year where a lot of people have been in lockdown, the social and emotional health and development of some of our younger kids is a concern, and it can cause a problem in the school and the actual academic achievement that may or may not take place. So one of the things I'll talk about here in a second is the investment we made in behavioral health services. There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms. We're blessed in Kershaw County to have the Alpha Center, and I've worked really closely with Mara Jones in trying to identify social workers that are going to work with our staff in providing homebound services to those students that are disengaged, that are struggling, because if we have a child that's behind, when they come back to school and they walk in the doors, it becomes more and more difficult for them. And so we need to address the behavioral health side of these things to make sure that that needs being met, and we can talk them through some of those challenges to make sure that that's not creating an achievement gap for us. So we're really looking forward to what that's going to be able to provide us. Again, the ESSER III funding is going to provide us 24 to 36 months of these services, and the goal shared with the board on all this stuff that we're doing is to find a way to manage our budget so that in the future that we can continue to maintain these services and not simply just pull the carpet out and they disappear. There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms.
Next comes the hygienic function. This one's my favorite. This has nothing to do with individual health, but it has a lot to do with the health of the race, at least as Inglis where Darwin or his first cousin Galton saw it. Hygiene is a polite way of saying that school is expected to accelerate natural selection by tagging the unfit so clearly. That's what all those little humiliations from first grade on, that's what all the posted list of ranked grades are about, so clearly that the unfit will drop from the reproduction sweepstakes, either in despair or because their likely mates will have accepted the school's judgment of them as terminally inferior.
And I apologize, you probably can't see that. So, and I'm gonna have to turn around because I can't see the side one. But in essence, we have received quite a bit of money from the federal government, okay? The problem with it is very restrictive on how we use the money. There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms. The other thing is the money wasn't front-loaded to us. We have to make an expenditure, and then we have to request reimbursement of that expenditure, and it has to fall into one of 15 categories that they have identified. There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms. So, I will tell you, in the Kershaw County School District, we have been very diligent about trying to grow our cash reserves, at least in my tenure here, and I know before I got here. And if it wasn't for that, we couldn't make the expenditures up front to turn around and then request the reimbursement. So at least in that aspect, we're in good shape to be able to do some of these things. But if you go through some of these categories, and I'm going to hit some of the big ones for you, but category 9, providing mental health services and supports. We're going to invest $1.689 million in that category. Now, that's for 24 to 36 months. That's not a one-year deal. We're looking at doing that for up to 3 years if they give us a carryover. Another big area for us is down in category 15. And that is an area that's going to allow us to pay for the teachers that are going into the virtual academy for 3 years. And that cost is going to cost it about $7 million. Now, I will tell you, if you go to our website, you can look at this. It's in detail on the website. But this gives you a little general idea, just quickly talking through it, on what we're doing this summer. And next summer, we're going to spend $330,000 on summer school. And again, summer school is really targeted at those kids who need remediation.
Concerning the LGBTQ,
yeah.
Will parents have the right to their right to choose to be respected in those situations? So, for example, explaining to a child, well, this child has two moms, or explaining to a child concepts such as gay, transgender, etc.
Yeah, so again, I'm a health educator, and that's not part of our health curriculum right now. You know, again, that's a national, you know, concept, but we stick, you know, it's always safe, and I know I've got some teachers in the audience. It's always safe if you stick to the standard in your content area, because that's, as teachers, what we do. Now, how do we do that? We also want to develop relationships with our children, because that helps engage them in our classrooms. But as long as they stay with the standards that they're supposed to be teaching, then we'll be fine. There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms.
I'm going to reiterate what she said, and thank you for being here. We appreciate it. I'm going to go a different route and focus on COVID. So our 2021-22 plan indicates that operations will return to normal, as you said today. However, it also states that plans are subject to change under the guidance of CDC and DHEC. I think most will agree here that their guidance changes as fast as the wind blows. So what reassurances can you give parents that if restrictions are reinforced, a parent's right to choose not to mask their child will be respected? And also, will those parents that are concerned with those restrictions be allowed the option to enroll their child into the virtual academy?
Yeah, so I'll try to circle around and make sure I hit all your questions. Let's start with the last first.
Okay.
And that is, I kind of shared that we didn't have full enrollment in the virtual academy, so there's seat spaces there, and that will always be an option. the one thing I will tell you as an educator, we also want to be very cautious about the amount of back and forth with the child. We went into the opt-out mode and the waiver last year. For us to go all the way back to forced face masking, it would have to be really, really bad. There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms for us to get to that point. And community rates would have to spiral, and we're still going to track contract tracing and rates within the schools. But the best I can tell you is I don't see that. But let me also tell you this. When this all started, we were having daily meetings with the state superintendent. And this is before any schools closed. There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms. And most of you probably don't know this. Right before our scheduled meeting was to occur, I get a cell phone call, and I look down, and it's Molly Spearman. And I'm like, oh, is that okay? Well, we all know Camden was ground zero for this. And she said, Shane, the governor's closing down your schools. And I said, okay, Molly, when? She said, he's got a press conference in 10 minutes. There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms. So some things will be out of our board's control and out of my control. But if at all possible, we'll maintain what we're doing. What we may do is we may start sanitizing again more frequently. We may, do several other things, but I just don't see us going back to where we were because, first of all, if you understand medicine, you understand herd immunity, and that's starting to happen within our communities. Whether you believe in vaccinations or don't believe in vaccinations, you're also getting more and more people that are vaccinated. So all those are good things for us to not ever have to go back to what you do. There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms.
Last comes a fancy Latin word, the propaedeutic function. That's a fancy word meaning that a small fraction of lucky kids will quietly be taught how to take over management of this continuing project. Guardians of a population deliberately dumbed down and rendered childlike in order that government and economic life can be managed with a minimum of hassle. It's that low down, nitty gritty, common purpose. Not Marx's grand warfare between classes and greedy captains of industry. It's simply so that management will have a minimum of hassles.
Hello, I'm Shane Robbins, Superintendent of the Kershaw County School District, and today I'm joined by Executive Director of Community Relations, Mary Ann Bird.
Good morning.
And today we're going to provide you with March's Soup Chat. I'd like you to notice that in doing so, we're exhibiting social distancing in this format. I urge you to maintain the guidelines of social distancing, washing your hands, covering your mouth when you cough, staying away from others if you're sick, and really helping us flatten the curve. And we're going to beat this thing. So, we are very proud of the support we've received as we've tried to go through this process. Again, it's unique. It's extraordinary. It's not something anybody expects or really prepares for, but I think we've responded really well.
When I have seen the bus drivers and transportation workers out there, the word that came to mind was heartwarming. just to see the dedication that our employees have and being on that front line. So it really is nice to see what we're able to do to help our own community.
Like most people across the state and across the country, we have as many questions as we do answers.
Right.
So we just try to stay very engaged with our local leaders and people that are making the decisions at higher levels so we're informed.
There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms.
Sometimes the worst reaction's an overreaction, and
right.
So we're just trying to absorb and digest and just make a good first decision. And
exactly.
And if it's not, you know, we will we'll recover from it and we'll make another decision to better ourselves.
To make sure that they are historically accurate, okay? And so I can't answer your question specifically because I'm not sitting in your classroom, but if our teacher is doing what the teacher is supposed to do and following the course guide and the course curriculum, then in terms of history, it's historically accurate.
There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms.
And I guess that's really kind of the easiest and best way I can explain it to you. But if it was inaccurate, it wouldn't be published and it wouldn't be adopted by the state.
There are certain things that we have to comply with, and the State Department or the federal government make sure that we're complying through reporting mechanisms.
South Carolina State Superintendent Molly Spearman went on the record encouraging teachers, coaches, and band directors to coerce and bully our students into getting a COVID vaccine. Something along the lines of, do your part for your team. If you want to be there for competitions, if you want to be there for football games, you don't want to miss events, you don't want your team to lose, you need to do your part. Kershaw County parents, this parent will not stand for that. My child will not be coerced. Also, I want to state for the record that I do not and will not ever consent to mandatory COVID testing or COVID vaccination for my daughter, who will be a Kershaw County School District student this year. If she is tested or vaccinated against my consent, without my consent, I will take legal action, and I will advise any other parent in the same situation to do the same. Also, I want to state for the record that my child will not be masked by Kershaw County School District, and it does not matter to me what the almighty CDC says. They changed their mind. Fast as I change my clothes. So I will not have my child masked. And if she is not allowed to be transferred to the virtual academy or opt out of masking, then I will pull her out of the school and put her online, just where she is at currently right now. She lives with her friends and she wants to come back. That's why I'm here.
I carry a card in my wallet with a quote from John Taylor Gatto. I look at this card, and any time I feel the urge to settle on an easy path and to stop learning, it reads, "You either learn your way towards writing your own script in life, or you unwittingly become an actor in someone else's script." I was the perfect student through high school and the beginning of college. I got good grades, turned assignments in on time, got into an Ivy League university, landed a comfortable research fellowship, and continued my track toward being defined as a top student. Then I left school. I loved learning and enjoyed the aspects of school that allowed me to do that. But I always knew there was something off about school when I was a student. I was a product of the No Child Left Behind era, and I remember the deluge of standardized tests that always defined the end of the school year. My best teachers were those who did not follow exam requirements and only begrudgingly made sure that the exams were completed. The best teacher I had was one who signed passes so students could skip other classes to go to her classroom and work on whatever they wanted. The worst were those obsessed with meeting state-mandated standards. I thought getting to college would allow me to pursue my passions and dreams and finally break free of the chains that mandatory schooling put on me. I thought schooling and education didn't have to be mutually exclusive. I thought K through 12 was merely a broken version of something better. I was wrong. At college, I found a continuation of the same push towards standardization and measuring human drives, skills, desires, dreams, and futures. I saw high-caliber classmates get caught in fierce competition for conventional careers, working at companies for which they cared very little. People who were capable of changing the world wasted their intelligence and drive on things like impressing recruiters from Goldman Sachs or Facebook. Instead of blowing their time on arbitrary exams, they blew their time on arbitrary accolades from others. I first came across John Taylor Gatto's work when I realized that my love of learning and my dislike of school were related. It started with a video on YouTube of Gatto explaining the purpose of school and ended with my devouring all of his books. For the first time in my life, I felt like somebody had seen what I had seen and was assuring me that I wasn't crazy to want something better than school. For the first time in my life, I found somebody who took schooling to its logical conclusion. Here was somebody who had seen what I had seen and couldn't bring himself to keep perpetuating the system. Rather than sit around and wait year after year as that system kept crushing students and stealing their dreams, he actually did something about it. What an inspiration! I couldn't keep participating in a system that was not only grinding me down into a cog for somebody else, but was also taking some of the best and hardest working young people I knew and dumbing them down. Being a great student ended up holding me back. The years and energy I spent trying to get into a good college and continue the standardization and industrialization I experienced in K-12 could have been spent developing the passions I had as a child and the skills to live out my dreams. I am one of the fortunate ones. I realized this and now spend my time developing these skills and de-schooling myself. I work every day to unlearn the habits I picked up in school that made me a good student but prevent me from being the best version of myself. For me, this meant leaving school. I found myself more fulfilled, more intellectually engaged, more productive, and happier when I wasn't playing for a place at the front of the conveyor belt. Gatto first wrote Dumbing Us Down 25 years ago, before the mass popularization of the internet. Then one could find an excuse to not be educated outside of school. Today it's not only inexcusable, but nearly impossible. Your iPhone contains access to the entire annals of human knowledge for less than the price of a textbook at Harvard. You are six circles removed from any expert on the face of the planet and can contact them instantly with an email. You can create a business in an hour and launch a website in 15 minutes, all for less than the price of an hour of class at Penn. It has never been easier for somebody to create opportunities for themselves. There's no need to wait for permission from deans or employers. In my case, this meant reaching out to a friend who was starting a company called Praxis, building something better than college. I asked him to let me work for free. After several months of working with him, I joined the team full-time and had access to more and better educational resources than I had in the 2 years I was at an Ivy League university. And that's the inspiration that drives us at Praxis. We believe that Gatto is right. You can educate your own. You can educate yourself. You are better set working with people in the real world and stepping outside the classroom. John Taylor Gatto served as an inspiration to me because his story taught me that you don't have to be a victim. You don't have to be a passive cog in the machine of standardized education. You don't have to suck it up and go 12 years and then 4 more and then have to pay money for the damage done in those 4. You can opt out. You can do something better. You can help your children, your friends, and your teachers do better. We don't need school reform. Schools are working exactly as their designers intended. We need more choices and options outside of school. At the end of the day, the person who creates those is you. Stop waiting for permission from others and create opportunities to learn. Thanks to the work of Gatto and others, the cat's out of the bag. You have no excuse not to.
School was intended on this continent to be as it had been in northern Germany, a fifth column into the burgeoning libertarian condition where disenfranchised and oppressed groups were clamoring for some kind of seat at the bargaining table. School was to be a surgical incision into which the class-based management theories of England were to be inserted to interdict the liberty traditions. England's multi-layered social class is simply a modern-day representation of Julius Caesar's advice that when you're overwhelmed by the enemy, you divide them and conquer them that way by setting them against each other. The method was to be by infiltration into the minds of children out of sight of their parents. The well-read here won't be shocked. Theorists from Plato to Rousseau to Frederick of Prussia knew and taught explicitly that if children could be kept childish beyond its term in nature, if they could be cloistered in a society of children without any real responsibility except obedience, if their inner lives could be attenuated by removing the insights of history, literature, philosophy, economics, religion, if the imminence of death and the certainty of pain and loss can be removed from daily consciousness, if the profound reflections on one's own death could be replaced with the trivializing emotions of greed, envy, jealousy, and fear, young people would grow older, but they would never grow up, and a great enduring problem of supervision would be solved. For who can argue against the truth that childish and childlike people are far easier to manage than critically trained, self-reliant ones? And now you're...
The philosophy of liberty is based on the principle of self-ownership. You own your own life. To deny this is to imply that another person has a higher claim on your life than you do. No other person or group of persons own your life, nor do you own the life of others. You exist in time, past, present, future. This is manifesting life, liberty, and the product of your life and liberty. To lose your life is to lose your future. To lose your liberty is to lose your present. And to lose that product of your life and liberty is to lose that portion of your past that produced it. A product of you, life, and liberty is your property. Property is the fruit of your labor, the product of your time, energy, and talents. Property is that part of nature which you turn to valuable use. Property is the property of others that is given to you by voluntary exchange and mutual consent. Two people who exchange property voluntarily are both better off, or they wouldn't do it. Only they may rightfully make that decision for themselves. At times, some people use force or fraud to take from others without voluntary consent. The initiation of force or fraud, to take life is murder, to take liberty is slavery, and to take property is theft. It is the same whether these actions are done by one person acting alone, by the many acting against the few, or even by officials with fine hats. You have the right to protect your own life, liberty, and justly acquired property from the forceful aggression of others. And you may ask others to help defend you. But you do not have the right to initiate force against the life, liberty, and property of others. Thus, you have no right to designate some other person to initiate force against others on your behalf. You have the right to seek leaders for yourself, but you have no right to impose rulers onto others. No matter how officials are selected, they are only human beings, and they have no rights or claims that are higher than those of any other human beings, Regardless of the imaginative labels for their behavior or the number of people encouraging them, officials have no right to murder, enslave, or to steal. You cannot give them any rights that you do not have yourself. Since you own your life, you are responsible for your life. You do not rent your life from others who demand your obedience. Nor are you a slave to others who demand your sacrifice. You choose your own goals based on your own values. Success and failure are both the necessary incentives to learn and grow. Your actions on behalf of others or their actions on behalf of you is virtuous only when it is derived from voluntary mutual consent. For virtue can exist only when there is free choice. This is the basis of a truly free society. It is not only the most practical and humanitarian foundation for human action, it is also the most ethical. Problems in the world that arise from the initiation of force by government have a solution. The solution is for the people of the earth to stop asking government officials to initiate force on their behalf. Evil does not arise only from evil people, but also from good people who tolerate the initiation of force as a means to their own ends. In this manner, good people have empowered evil people throughout history. Having confidence in a free society is to focus on the process of discovery in the marketplace of values, rather than to focus on some imposed vision or goal. Using government force to impose a vision on others is intellectual sloth and typically results in unintended, perverse consequences. Achieving a free society requires courage to think, to talk, and to act, especially when it is easier to do nothing.
Where you been? You been watching PMS, NBC, and all that? I'm telling you, boy, you got to quit watching that shit. That'll pollute your mind and all. It's kind of like government screws. That'll pollute your mind where you think the government loves you and everything. Don't you know that's wrong?
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger. No, Will Robinson. Danger.
Take away the key. Take away.